Hello everyone and welcome to another OneLiner.com podcast. I, as always, am Craig Eastman, and with me is Scott Morris.
Hello.
And Ruth Avondale.
How do you?
And for once we're coming to you all from the one location, sunny Rhiwabon in North Wales. Let's crack on.
Green Zone marks the re-teaming of Paul Greengrass, director of the last two Bond films, with its star Matt Damon. Only this time they fancy mucking about in the Middle East for a bit. Damon playing an army officer who's forced to go rogue hunting for weapons of mass destruction in an unstable area.
Scott, how unstable is this area?
Oh, it's very unstable.
Drew, do you concur with the instability of this area?
Oh, it's falling down around their ears. It's very, very unstable indeed.
Good grief. What of the film?
It is very good, is as much as I can say about it. Okay, let's go on. The way it's been advertised, I almost thought it was going to be another one of the Bourne films that seemed to be pushing that quite a lot, and it does share an awful lot in style with the other Bourne identity whatnot films. So it's an interesting story. It's well enough told. It's very pacey, it's very punchy. There's not an awful lot of action scenes in it, which it seems to be marketed more as a kind of action kind of thing, and it's not really.
But the trailers are definitely playing off the Bourne heritage, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's a big element of it, but it's not a pure action film. Yeah. There's an awful lot of intrigue, which is as Matt Damon's character is trying to work out why he's been getting bum intelligence and where all this is coming from, and it all unfolds and there's all conspiracies above his head and all that kind of thing, and it's all very interesting.
You said bum intelligence.
Or as he says it, when he goes to these sites and doesn't find any weapons of mass destruction, he rolls a donut, which is that was one of my favourite phrases from the film. We've been rolling donuts.
Drew, what would you add?
As Scott said, it's not that much of an action film, certainly not as much as the trailer suggests. It's more perhaps something between The Kingdom, certainly in terms of the setting in Middle East, and perhaps something like a spy film. It's more about intrigue and investigation and infiltration to some degree. It's a very enjoyable film, very competent. There's some fairly overt political stuff about the missing weapons of mass destruction and quite why United States went to war against Iraq.
Missing implying they existed.
Yes, but it's not actually that relevant to the film. That could be anywhere. It's more about political corruption, and that could be set anywhere, any when. So that's kind of unimportant to it, but it's very strong performances all around. The annoying things are the typical Paul Greengrass shaky cam, never ever allowing anybody, especially the few real action scenes that are there, you never have the camera steady for long enough to actually see what's going on, especially the close-ups of hand-to-hand combat. But while I did find it a bit annoying, it's a Paul Greengrass film, you know exactly what to expect, so if it's really going to bother you, don't watch it. It's a Paul Greengrass film, you know what's going to happen. And as I say, it didn't make the film lesser for me, I think it is unnecessary. But yeah, it's an enjoyable film, competent performances, decent thriller, well recommended.
It's interesting that as I sit here, I'm just glancing at the IMDb page for Green Zone, and in the news section, was Green Zone missold? With a deftness of touch much akin to a US government committee on WMDs, the Universal Pictures marketing department set out to convince us that Green Zone was essentially Bourne 4. Does that sound about right?
Absolutely.
Yes, and it's not. But it's not to say it's not good.
We've actually said this quite a number of occasions over the past, year and a half, I guess. Trailers are beginning to be less and less anything to do with the film they're advertising nowadays. There have been an awful lot in the last year, definitely.
Yeah.
Where the film has borne very, very little relationship to the trailer at all. And I'm not quite sure who that serves, what purpose that serves. Like, even if it gets people in on the first weekend, they're quite soon going to hear that it's not that from their friends or whatever. And then you're just going to have a load of unhappy people who won't buy the DVD.
Yeah.
I fail to see the purpose of it.
They're saying here that perhaps it's a result of the Hurt Locker having performed so poorly, and that they don't want to market it as a film essentially that's all about political intrigue and the Iraq war and the such like. If something as excellent as the Hurt Locker can't sell, then we'd better sell this as something as it's not, in order to get bums in seats. Interesting.
Oh, sorry, but I better stop nodding on microphone and I'll just say I agree
with
you.
Yes, yeah. Interesting that, but by no means a bad film. In fact, quite a good film, you reckon?
Yes.
Excellent. Check it out. Just don't be expecting Mondo gunfight action. Crazy Heart has proven quite the directorial debut for Scott Cooper, what with its lead actor Jeff Bridges walking away from this year's Oscars with the Best Actor gong. I haven't seen Crazy Heart, so Drew is going to tell us what it's about.
Jeff Bridges plays Bad Blake, a former top country star who's down in his luck, playing little shitty pubs and bowling alleys, trying to make ends meet, more or less, in the hope that one day he'll get back into the limelight. The story is largely of him travelling about in these places, meeting people, meeting the new country hotness, Tommy Sweets, who was his former protege and is now this massive star. And it sounds reasonably mundane and not particularly original, and I suppose story-wise it is, but what sets it apart from particularly strong performances all round, is that it feels, probably more than any film of the type, real, in as much as his attitudes to people seem believable, what is happening in his life seems believable, the dialogue seems believable, and it's so easy for less capable hands for everything to be turned up a notch, but just none of it would ring true. He's an alcoholic, and there's some of the problems of that you've seen in other films, but again, it just seems very, very authentic. I'm not quite sure what I'm trying to say here.
It's good.
Well, yes, it's very good. I mean, for instance, the Tommy Sweet character, who was his protege, Bad Blake's got some resentment, I would say, towards him, but he still likes him, he still gets on with him, he still works with him. In another film, he would be incredibly embittered, and it would be destroying him. And yeah, he's got a bit of jealousy, perhaps, that his career's taken off while his own's gone down, but he's not allowed to destroy him. He's got problems with his alcoholism, but he's not a complete arsehole. He's going to work on his problems, and the character is very sympathetic, and it's just extremely well played. I still would say quite what I feel about it, but it's very compelling performance. The only problem is that so much of it is based around country music, which I don't like, yet I still found the film very enjoyable. So if that's your type of music,
it might be a hard initial sell to someone who can't abide country music, but
if that's your type of music, you'll get even more of it than I did. But if you don't like it, and I don't, I wouldn't allow it to put you off, because the film's more than good enough to make up for music that you may not find to your taste.
Yeah, it keeps itself relatively subtle. It doesn't deal in the same kind of massive stereotypes, especially.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the basic plot, when you introduce this, something like a drunk falls in love and gets redeemed and cleans himself up, is something you've seen umpteen million times before, but it's normally done in a way where the alcoholic in the first instance is so roundly obnoxious and...
Yes. Yes. It's a caricature alcoholic.
Yes, and then becomes essentially Jesus at the end of it, and it's all sweetness and light. And this one, it doesn't do that. It's a lot more believable. It's a lot more...
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because the other films, it would be turned up one just to create drama, perhaps. And it's unnecessary. There's one moment in it when something happens in his relationship with Maggie Gyllenhaal that had me slightly worried it was going to take the huge drama bomb turn. But fortunately, it didn't. Again, it was more just a believable thing that would become a wake-up call, a reason for crisis in the relationship, but without being unnecessarily melodramatic or traumatic. It's just very, very well crafted indeed. The only slightly odd thing, while he's very good in as much as he has to do, that the Tommy Sweet character is played by Colin Farrell. Although doing a superb accent, it's proven that either the only accent Colin Farrell can't do is Landon, or it's Woody Allen's fault, which... very possible it's that. Just bring up horrible memories of Cassandra's Dream there.
Yeah, uniformly well acted is what I don't really know who's up against in the Oscars, but it certainly seems like it's a worthy winner for Bridges.
I haven't seen Crazy Heart. I should like to catch up with it on that recommendation. You know what they say, boys? The harder the life, the sweeter the song. From a poetic and relevant tagline to Someone Is Missing, the less than descriptive tagline for Martin Scorsese's latest DiCaprio starrer, Shutter Island. Set in 1954, it stars DiCaprio as US Marshal Terry Daniels, who travels to the titular Shutter Island, an island-bound mental institute, to investigate the disappearance of a murderess who has apparently disappeared from her cell. Is it likely to be a linear tale? Linear narrative, Scott, or do we think this story is going to take a monumental twist?
What, something set in a mental institution that would possibly throw in twist endings and all sorts of manner of things? I can't believe that would happen.
No, not on Ben Kingsley's watch.
Oh. No.
Well, I don't believe in twist endings, but twist endings believe in me.
Off to Shutter Island with you, sir. It's an interesting return to non-gangster territory for Scorsese, isn't it? He likes to do this sort of thing every now and again. By this sort of thing, I mean just anything other than a film about gangsters. Everyone associates him with gangster flicks, but actually probably about half his back catalogue is composed of non-gangster flicks.
Yeah, well, this is a man, of course, that directed Kundun about the Dalai Lama.
Well, exactly, yes.
It's got quite an eclectic selection of films there.
He's a man who I don't think has ever made a bad film, but where on the scale of greatness in his canon does Shutter Island fall, Scott?
I'm not entirely sure yet, having watched this yesterday. I'm still not really 100% sure what I think of it, but I didn't like it very much, is all I can say on a first impressions. And I don't like it through any fault of it. The film, as far as I can see, for a lot of it, is very well done. It's very well crafted. It's very well acted. The plot is, for this sort of thing, fine. It just didn't seem to grab me. It seemed very desperately trying to create an atmosphere, and it just wasn't captivating me in the slightest, and I just kind of couldn't really bring myself to get into it all that much. It seemed, I mean, there's obviously an awful lot of work going into it. I don't know if it's maybe the styles are clashing too much. I mean, there's strange things going on when one of the characters has fairly frequent dream and nightmare sequences, which have a really strange sort of 70s European art house aesthetic to them.
Which I quite enjoyed, actually.
I enjoyed it, but it kind of doesn't really fit with the rest of the film. It seems like a lot of things that individually I would probably like, but when you put them all together and take them as part of a film, it just kind of left me a bit cold, and I wasn't all that affected by it. And it's annoying, because I've no real rationale for saying that I could hate it because of any one particular thing, but it just did not really captivate me in the slightest, which is not to say it's a bad film. It's not a bad way to spend 2 hours, and it's certainly not the worst film I'll see this year, but I couldn't really say that I enjoyed it.
True.
I would say I'm also not entirely decided. I certainly wouldn't say it was a bad film, and as Scott said, it's got very good production values. It's beautifully shot. The only problem in terms of how it's made, apart from perhaps a slight clash of styles, is, and I don't know whether it's perhaps something gone wrong, but there's some very odd editing in a couple of places that doesn't seem to work, particularly right at the beginning. What it looks like is that they didn't get the shots they needed and had to cobble something together. But fortunately, that's early on. If it had happened later, it probably would have thrown you out of the film. I find it reasonably enjoyable, I guess. I think the problem with this is it's an immense institution, therefore you know there are going to be twists, and you end up finding yourself sitting there thinking, is this a twist? Is that a twist as opposed to just sitting enjoying the film?
Interesting, because we discussed it last night. There were a couple of interesting little editing bits that I thought I'd mentioned, noticed as well. I wondered if he was working with anyone else this time, but he's still working with Thelma Shoemaker, who he's worked with on all of his films.
Yeah, that's the other problem too. With this type of film, with psychological stuff, you think that it's not uncommon for somebody to put in little visual clues if you're paying attention. So I don't know whether there was something odd with the editing there, or whether that was deliberate.
Yeah, some sort of visual cue as to...
I don't know, I find it reasonably enjoyable. It's certainly far, far away from Scorsese's best.
It's going to warrant a second watch, but maybe not in terms of the traditional notion of a second watch, and I really enjoyed that. I'd like to see it again. I'm as undecided as you guys are. I perhaps have slightly more reason to be undecided in that I fell asleep twice during it. Not necessarily a comment on the quality of the film, more how knackered I was. The main problem I had with it was that it seemed to be trying too hard. It was far too unnecessarily convoluted. It felt like one of those films that's been written backwards. It started from a definite endpoint, and it started with a revelation and then has been written backwards and has just ended up getting tangled in itself.
Although,
the whole
way. It doesn't necessarily have a definite endpoint. There are two bits of ambiguity about the end, which are quite light. But yeah, I know you mean it feels like it's been written the wrong way around.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is always a problem, because then you just have to start filling in stuff to make your ending make sense, as opposed to change your ending potentially because that's the way you find you've written it.
Well, I felt as well watching it that very few of the characters actually felt believable, but then can't really speak too much about any of the film without giving away some sort of crucial clue if you haven't guessed it already. A lot of the characters felt quite unnatural to me, and then that's just perhaps quite a good explanation for that as to why that would be, but that I found that very off-putting for the first hour and a half.
But at the same time though, if the characters don't feel real or believable, it makes the film less enjoyable, and therefore there isn't any point.
Yeah, it's another one of those, you probably have a good idea. I mean, I think most of us probably guessed what the ending was going to be before we went in, but having gone in expecting what was going to happen at the end, I found myself watching the whole film looking for clues and trying to piece together myself, right, in what way is this going to turn out to give me the necessary ending that I'm thinking of here, which I know exactly what it's going to be, but how is this all going to fall into place? And I couldn't do that, and I think that's probably because it's just not particularly well written. Maybe it's just me.
Well, you fell asleep, and so you don't know whether you missed something crucial. I don't feel that differently myself, and I stayed awake throughout it, so perhaps not.
I just felt it was trying far too hard, and it was far too messy, and it was...
I think the problem with that sort of film in general is that people think they're being very, very clever to have it really convoluted, but then you just get lost and things don't necessarily make sense, whereas it'd probably be much smarter to have it much simpler.
The simpler the better, basically, yeah. But no, I'm definitely going to watch it again, not only because I missed part of it, because I'd like to see if there are actual clues throughout as to what's going to happen that I've missed the first time round. But I know a lot of people go in expecting a certain ending, and they're probably going to, that'll probably be the ending they were thinking of, but I'm surprised if it's going to be the type of film people expected when they went in. Again, it's been marketed more as some sort of psychological horror scare movie, but it's not.
Which
really
is
that.
Not.
No, I mean, there are some fairly harrowing images throughout it. I mean, you can't really get wander around the concentration camps of Dachau, that one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Without having a certain level of revulsion to it. But no, it's not a jumpy, scary, paranoia type thing, which, again, I suppose the trailer does imply that as well. So
yeah, it's no Darkness Falls.
No.
Oh, no.
So again, I was like saying maybe because that type of film seemed to think it should be convoluted, and they fall into the trap of using some of the silly devices, like in this case, wordplay.
Yeah.
As we mentioned yesterday.
Perhaps what annoyed me most about it is it's one of those films that in order to get where it wanted to go, it has to do a whole lot of stuff that makes sense. And it just uses the get out clause of, oh, well, it's okay, that bit was just, can I say anything without giving it away?
I think all we can say is that it's in a very elaborate scheme that would in no way or shape ever be done in real life because it's plainly mental.
Yes. It uses a technique of laying down a lot of stuff that makes absolutely no sense and explaining it away as a particular person just imagined that, really. So yeah, it's an odd one, Shutter Island. I can't say I disliked it, but I can't say I really enjoyed it.
Although you, Scott, at least two of us would be prepared to watch it again. So it can't be that bad, I would say.
No, so there you are. And we'd also like to point out that it's the good Ben Kingsley who turned up this time.
Oh, that's the best Ben Kingsley I've seen since House of Sand Fog,
probably. The Whackness.
Oh, The Whackness, yes.
The Whackness, come on. There you are. And a criminally underused Emily Mortimer. But enough of that. So there you are. That's what we've got to say about that. Keep it real, and we will speak to you all again soon. I'm Craig, and I'm saying goodbye. Scott's saying...
Bye.
Drew's saying...
Goodbye in Welsh.
Keep it real. Cheerio.
Lasciate ognus braccia voi cerntrati.